Welcome to Coffee with Dr. Ray, the podcast for anything and everything health over a cup of your favorite coffee. Come join me as I focus on a variety of hot topics surrounding physical health, nutrition, and overall wellness. My name is Dr. Ray Pomano. I'm a board-certified chiropractor and a clinical professor based out of San Francisco, California. You're listening to Coffee with Dr. Ray.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Coffee with Dr. Ray. And I have a special treat for everybody. I have a special guest today reporting live from Europe in the UK, Dr. Patrick Hogg, who is also the host of Dr. Welcome to the show, Dr. Patrick Hogg.
Thank you so much for having me.
For sure. Folks at home, viewers at home, this is going to be a very interesting one because I'm reporting this one, reporting live at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time in San Francisco, and Dr. Patrick Hogg is over in the UK, and I believe it is 9 p.m.
Yeah, that's right. That's it.
Adding another hour because of daylight savings time, the audacity. So actually, I have stumbled onto one of Dr. Patrick Hogg's episodes during the COVID lockdown here in San Francisco, and it actually inspired me to also create an episode as well, a platform as well, during these crazy past couple of months. So thank you for the inspiration, Dr. Patrick, and thank you for being a part of our show today.
Absolutely my pleasure.
Now, for me, what's interesting to me, one of the things interesting to me is chiropractic in the UK. Of course, as a chiropractor here in San Francisco, there's a lot of exposure here, a lot of saturation. What I don't think there is a lot of in Europe in general is just chiropractic care. I know that there are a few providers out there. I've gone to school with a few that have gone to practice in Spain and France, the United Kingdom as well. Over in Poland, I had somebody from Poland last season. But I don't think there's a lot of saturation. There's a lot of exposure for chiropractic care. So I'm interested from you, like, what's that like? What's the schooling like? Where did you go to school at even? What were the requirements? What was that like?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Number one, there isn't the same market for it over here. It's completely different. I know over in America, you're much more in like a privatized health system. Whereas in the UK, it's completely different. It's completely flipped. We have our own national service. And so with there being a national health service, there isn't necessarily the heightened level of exposure that maybe you would have if people were forced to go private. So in the UK, we generally, I think it's about 3,500 to 4,000 currently registered chiropractors for a population of about 70 to 80 million. And that's across the UK, Ireland, and Wales and England. So the education, again, I think is slightly different. I know over here you can do an undergraduate master's degree, which consists of about 4 years. I did a bachelor's of human science. So I spent 3 years, and then I did a master's in chiropractic, which was a further 2 years. So I actually spent 5 years doing my degree. But it's as a compulsory requirement in the UK is minimum 4 years. I studied in Bournemouth. Actually, funny enough, which is my hometown. I grew up thinking that I was going to become a medical doctor, and I had a couple of personal experiences that kind of personally put me off of going down that route, and so I kind of flipped, and it put me onto one of my first books in chiropractic, which I think was The Vital Truth, and I can't remember the name of the author. I just remember that there was a couple of messages in that book that really hit home with me. And then when I got to chiropractic school, I realized that actually what they're teaching there, it's not like that. They're not teaching like they are in those books at the schools. It's a completely different experience. I must admit, it wasn't necessarily what I expected. It was very medical. There wasn't necessarily the balance. It was, okay, let's get your clinical studies, let you get your diagnostic studies, your orthopedic tests. There was very little emphasis on the adjustment and really true health and balanced health and education. which is probably the forefront of where chiropractic really needs to go, or where we should be. You know, we're foot soldiers, really, we are. We are.
Now, are the schools that offer chiropractic education in the UK, are they standalone schools, or are these additional programs within another school, like a healthcare degree that they that people will opt for additional training? For example, in the United States, the schools for chiropractic, they are standalone schools. They're schools of chiropractic. Palmer College of Chiropractic, for example, Life College of Chiropractic. These are just schools only devoted for chiropractic care or anything that might be very, very, very similar and related.
Mm-hmm. So we have Glamorgan, which is the Welsh Institute of Chiropractors. That university is a mixed university. So it's a program alongside other programs. It's not a specifically devout chiropractic school. The university that I studied at, the Anglo-European College of Chiropractic in Bournemouth, that was a branch. Now, it was mediated. It was mediated through Bournemouth University, but it was actually pretty much, it's a standalone. It's actually now got independent status since I finished. I believe it got independent status a year or 2 years after I graduated, which was 6 years ago. So that's completely standalone as well. We have the McTimony College, which is in Oxford. That again, I believe, is completely standalone. There's South Bank. Now, I don't really know an awful lot about this college. It's just one that I've kind of heard of through the grapevine, but I don't really know an awful lot about it. And then there's currently a new university that's being set up in Scotland in Edinburgh.
Called
the SSE. So it's going to be the Scottish School of Chiropractic, and that's actually taking the stance of being a more wellness-based chiropractic school. So a little bit more like Life, that its focus is on bringing out students into the field that are going to be a little bit more chiropractic focused,
and
a little bit more understanding on the principles, the philosophy.
Got it.
Really just understanding chiropractic and how to adjust and how to look after patients in a chiropractic way.
Right. Yeah. And so for the viewers at home, the philosophy of chiropractic, and a lot of different colleges will, a lot of different chiropractic schools will have different tenets and what their focus is. You know, for example, a school near us in over in Hayward is more of like the innate, like the spiritual essence of the healing. Whereas Palmer College of Chiropractic, where I went to in the South Bay of California, more on research, more on the biomechanics of it all. So while there are plenty of chiropractors out there, there are also different philosophies and theologies that we all go with. So that's what Dr. Patrick Hogg is touching up on a little bit. Now, what I find interesting is that you mentioned that your program was 2 years for the master's, after the base of the 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So you do it as a bachelor's of 3 years.
Okay.
Bachelor's is 3 years. So your bachelor of science would be a 3-year degree. And then your master's in chiropractic. They sold it as 2 degrees. It wasn't. It was a way of structuring the course.
Okay.
To be honest, I felt personally it was a little bit stretched in the master's part. you could have quite comfortably done it like the previous M Cairo students were doing it in a year.
Okay. Now, were there any courses of those 2 years, of the chiropractic courses in those first 3 years of the bachelor's, or was it completely separate?
No, we were studying chiropractic stuff in the first 3 years. That's what I mean. So they sold it as 2 degrees. So they sold it as a human science degree and a master's in chiropractic, but it was all mediated under the same school. And I believe when I spoke to tutors about this, the reason for it is that in the UK, we get a lot of chiropractors come and study from places like Norway. And in Norway, they prefer it when they have 5 years of education.
Okay.
So they kind of change the degree to suit for the whole of Europe and what different countries were regulating. But not
it.
The course was set up for specifically chiropractors. If you wanted to understand or you wanted to leave, which there was a gentleman in my year that did leave after the 3 years, he got his bachelor's of science and decided, actually, do you know what, this course isn't for me. I've decided that this isn't right. Went on and did something else. He did just take the bachelor's of human science, which you could do. You could do, and you would be able to utilize that stuff. It gave you all your basic sciences and blah 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 blah. But
got it.
Yeah, there was chiropractic courses, there was adjusting, there was your soft tissues, your mechanics. So it did do all of that stuff as well.
So it would be 5 years. So because in the United States, the typical trend is a 4-year bachelor's degree, which is typically not anything related to chiropractic. Maybe pre-med for some folks, but it's typically an entirely different degree. I would say for Palmer, when I went to Palmer, a lot of my fellow classmates had 4-year degrees in kinesiology. So the study of like exercise science, for example, a handful of folks majored in human biology, pre-medical health sciences, but it was usually something that had nothing of chiropractic in the core of that 4-year degree. And then it was another 3.5 years in chiropractic alone. The philosophy, the adjusting, the soft tissue, the rehab, rehabilitation, all that stuff.
No, it wasn't set up like that for us. you start pretty much learning your palpation skills and your MSK stuff like literally day one.
Okay. Day one. Okay. What were the last 2 years then? Was it clinical or?
so stretch it out? No. Yeah, so the second to last year was pretty much like a very slow introduction to clinical practice. We did some extra courses in like dry needling and they fluffed it. I genuinely think we were the first year that they actually trialed this course. It was quite interesting because there were multiple occasions where I think the course maybe got mucked up a little bit. We got played around a little bit and they were kind of experimenting and trying to work stuff out. It was an interesting run, but hey, look, I'm still here. I'm still running the practice. And do you know what? The education at my university got me the skills I needed. It got me, look, the one thing that we have to understand coming out of university is that we all understand how to diagnose the problem.
Definitely.
We all know. And the most important skill to know is how not to kill your patients.
Absolutely.
It's the most important skill. If someone's coming in with a serious condition, you're taught to spot it. Like the thing they drill the most at schools is catch cancer early, you know, catch heart disease early, catch strokes early, you know, avoid the dangerous conditions. And then the rest of it, you can learn when you're on the job. Like most of the other stuff you learn from the experience, you know, what's the best technique for the mechanical lower back pain? What's the best technique for the person that comes in with the tennis elbow or the frozen shoulder or whatever it might be? That stuff typically you can learn that without supervision.
Yeah, 100% agree. And I agree with you. And I think at least for Palmer, we have, you know, a whole quarter's worth of pathology courses where we recognize early signs and symptoms of cardiovascular disease in the making, bone and joint diseases, cancerous diseases, metabolic diseases, endocrinological diseases. And we may never see these conditions in real life in front of us, but absolutely important to know the signs that may trigger you to want to refer out and really evaluate during the testing process, for sure.
Mm. And something else interesting that I've noticed is that the longer I'm in practice, the more I kind of go back and I reflect on those pathology courses and go, actually, do you know what? I'm really glad I know that now.
Yeah.
Because when you start thinking about the pathology of the inflammatory process and you start going, hang on, this isn't like a singular cell or singular space pathology. This isn't a singular, like we look at inflammation of like tendonitis, for example.
Right.
You know, why would someone develop a tendon? And you start going, you go back to your pathology course and you go, actually, do you know what? This wasn't irrelevant. You know, all these confounding factors that we started learning on the inflammatory process. And you start going, actually, do you know what? This makes more sense. And you start building that bigger picture again. We all want to get out of school and start practicing on people. But when you start actually breaking it down, you start seeing it in practice, and you start going, okay, the mechanical stuff isn't working with the patient. Like, maybe I should go back to my pathology. What other reasons? Why would this pathology test up? And then you start going back through the chemical processes, and you start then really like driving back to your philosophy of what are the three things that cause disease: chemical stress, physical stress, emotional stress, and how does that affect the chemical and the physiological pathway. You start going back to your pathology, you start putting all that kind of that stuff that you start learning back into the mix, and you go, oh, actually, do you know what, I thought this was absolute BS when I was at school, but actually it's actually really important. And you may not need to know exact details, but knowing that that stuff is happening is something that, since I've come away, and is now humbling to know that that stuff was relevant, and that these people that want to do like weekend or think that you can do a chiropractic degree in a year, maybe 2 years, 3 years, 4 years into practice, they'll be a little bit stuck.
Right, right. I totally agree. And I'll have students every now and then come shadow, and they're watching my thought process, and all the questions I get asked is, why are you treating X, Y, and Z if the complaint is G, for example? And it's like, you got to think, this is not just a one road situation. There are multiple factors that are happening at the same time, multiple systems that could be involved, multiple emotional, environmental factors, right? The global pandemic and working from home and stress and physiological stress and psychological stress and anxiety and all these emotions, right? So you can't just think pain in the elbow, work on just the elbow. No, there could be other factors as well. There could be nutritional deficiencies as well. You may need to consider co-management, you know, all the things, right? So definitely agree with you on that. Now, the providers that you go to school with in the UK, where do they often end up? I mean, are they all staying in the United Kingdom? Are they going to other parts of Europe, other parts of the globe?
The students that I studied with?
Yes.
Okay, so ironically, my class year, English people were in the minority.
Okay.
Yeah. So when you look at the class, I think my class was about 70 students. We had, I think, 17 Brits. So less than a third of the class.
Wow.
Yeah. So then the vast majority are the rest of Europe. So we had Norwegians. We had Finnish, we had German, we had Dutch, we had, I think I had a couple of Chinese people in my year. Italians. But the thing is, some of them will stay, some of them will go. Some of them will stay, some of them will go. And ironically, you kind of think that the British people or the English people would stay in the UK. Nah. They go off to Norway too. And sometimes you think the Italians will go back to Italy. And no, one of my best friends that I studied with, he's practicing in Bournemouth, which is where we studied, which is it's a super saturated market. Like Bournemouth, as far as chiropractors are concerned, is a super saturated market. But he's working down in Bournemouth. But the difference is that when you start looking at areas that are super saturated, interestingly, what happens to the education of those areas? It goes up.
Yeah,
and when the education goes up, all of a sudden you may find that in an area where the education is low for chiropractic, you might be able to see 5 to 10% of the population. But in an area where the population is high education, you might see 30 to 40% of that population.
Yeah, and
it's a completely different ball game. So I know multiples of my friends that are still practicing in Bournemouth, and they're all busy. They're all busy. Well, busy-ish. Depends on what your target of busy is.
Right, right, right. And that can mean a lot of things for different kinds of providers, especially depending on the kind of chiropractic you practice as well, for sure. And folks at home who are tuning in, before we even started recording, Dr. Hogg and I were talking about kind of like the comparison between the numbers of chiropractors in the United States versus UK. For me, I would say the US is very, very saturated. And I was telling him, pretty much where you know that there's a chiropractic school, a chiropractic college, there are going to be chiropractors. I mean, here in the Bay Area, for those of you who don't know what the Bay Area means, it's the area that's around San Francisco, the bigger city in the Northern California area. And we have two chiropractic schools here. We have Life West, Life Chiropractic West, and then we have Palmer West over both in the Bay Area, about 20 miles from each other. And I would say the Bay Area is very well saturated. We have another school in Los Angeles, California, down south. And I'm sure that area is well saturated as well. And so I was, you know, telling Dr. Hogg, you know, we have schools in the West Coast, Midwest, East Coast, pretty much wherever there is a chiropractic college, you're going to find chiropractors in the U.S. for sure. I would say it's very, very well saturated. We have a huge national governing board. And even with my own school, Palmer College West, we even had a lot of Canadians there. And there are two Canadian schools in Canada, I think in Montreal or Toronto, and they all choose to go to the United States, I guess, for the weather. Go figure. But yeah, I'd say the U.S. is very, very saturated. But it seems like U.K. has a pretty big pull, too. I mean, in comparison, or maybe out of Europe.
So in the U.K., I think it's around 3,500 chiropractors registered. Okay. I think what it equates to is that there's one chiropractor for every 20,000 to 30,000 people in the country, I believe, something like that. Whereas I believe there's less chiropractors in Europe is what there is in a single state in America.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. I believe, and don't quote me exactly on that because I guess it depends on the states. But from what I've heard from my colleagues is that we're in a very lucky market. We're in a very lucky market over here. It's not uncommon for chiropractors to have 5 or 6 associates in a practice because we have the target audiences. Whereas I know that a lot of chiropractors in the States are solo docs. It's a very different world over here. We're currently a progressing and growing industry.
That's awesome.
It's definitely not the same over here as what it is in other countries. We're much more regulated than, say, for example, Spain. Spain are completely, it's a completely different regulation. No clinical notes. They can't take x-rays. It's completely different. So like, if you wanted to adjust 600 people in a week, fine. You wouldn't have to write one report card. Zero.
Wow.
People do choose to write their report cards. I've got plenty of friends that practice in Spain, and they will choose to write report cards, but you don't have to.
Okay.
That's the point. So it's a completely different regulation. Wow. Completely unregulated.
Wow. Is there a governing board in the UK?
Yes. Yeah, we've got the General Chiropractic Council, which, as I'm sure you're probably aware with your chiropractic councils, are generally just a bit of a pain. a ton of paperwork, but I mean, there are benefits and negatives to having these kinds of bodies, and from a perspective from the patient's point of view, it does put us in a position where we have to consider the patient first, whereas like when you have a completely unregulated profession, you know, there could be those people out there that will take advantage of that that situation. There will always be people that if something's unregulated, they'll take advantage. And that's the benefit of regulation.
Now, between chiropractic and I think for me being in California, I feel like I've heard more exposure for osteopathic medicine mm-hmm. versus chiropractic in the UK. Are they pretty competitive? Or how's the market like between the two? Is this a trigger?
Well, are there more osteopaths? Yeah.
Okay.
Do they see as much volume? No.
Okay.
So depends on what your condition of exposure consists of. If you have 20 osteopaths only seeing 10 people a week, and you have one chiropractor seeing 100 plus visits a week, you tell me which one's more influential.
I hear you.
So
no questions asked.
There are a lot of osteopaths in the UK. Yeah, there are. Do I see a competition? Personally, no.
Okay.
No, because I don't see one osteopath advertised on Facebook. I don't see one osteopath at the local fairs like me. I don't see one osteopath like doing Google ads. I just don't see any of it. I see none of it. So are they there? Yeah. Do they saturate the market? No.
Okay. So more presence socially and visibly for chiropractic in the UK.
Well, for me. In my town, yeah. Definitely.
Love it. And yet,
but then I have a coach, so.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
And you guys would be considered primary providers? Like, would your patients need a referral to come see you first?
No.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. And then the fears you're talking
about. Both osteopathy and chiropractic.
Got it. Okay, understood. And the fairs you were talking about earlier, are these health fairs you're referring to? Farmers markets? Expos?
Wherever the hell I can get a stall. I'm a big believer that one of the secrets to success is just showing up as much as possible. The funny thing is that as a marketing point of view nowadays, the average customer needs to see you 7 to 21 times.
Mm.
7 to 21 times. With scrolling on Facebook and YouTube adverts and the adverts in between every single half an episode of anything you want to watch on TV, people's attention spans for adverts are...
Oh, I hear you.
Yeah, you have to... So in my opinion, I want to be that guy that's got 50 emails in your inbox. They've seen you at the fair 3 times. They've walked past your office 6 times. They've had Facebook adverts appear on their Facebook. They may have even had a letter from you in the post. That's the guy that I want to be. That's the guy I want to be. Because for me, there's a part that I just want people to know me before they come to see me. But there's a part that I want that person to be warmed up and educated. I want them to understand that we're more than just back fixers. And you can only take people on that journey the more they're exposed to you.
Totally. Now, when you're at the fairs, do you do any demos? For example, for us, when we're doing health fairs, when there are health fairs in person, right? I'm usually doing demos of like soft tissue work, for example. We obviously can't adjust anybody without a full-on examination and something like that. What does your participation look like for these health fairs or for these fairs in general?
Yeah, super simple, bro. Look, nothing complex. So we offer like a free posture and spinal alignment screen. I take two photos of a patient. I'll take two photos of a person. I'll tell them what their problem. I'll get them to fill out a questionnaire first. What's your problem? Mm-hmm. Blah 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 blah. And then we'll just take a couple of photos and we'll just go through the problem. 5 minutes. That's why I try and stick to 5 minutes. And then I'll typically have a tech CA with me, who will just literally book them in. So I'll just talk to people 5 to 10 minutes. Be like, cool, this is what we're offering. Are you interested? Yep, cool. Come and speak to Andrea. And we'll typically do like an offer if they want to book their friends and family in. So it's like £40 for the initial assessment and then £25 for anyone extra who want to book in. Who can we book in?
Nice. Nice. So what is this, the usual sliding scale for services in the UK? For example, in San Francisco, I'm not going to give out mine, but as a ballpark, the initial exam is usually in like the $200 to $400 price range, US dollars, of course. And then the subsequent visit, maybe $70 to $150.
Cool. So no. So average UK visit. So obviously one, I don't work in dollars. So we'll have to try and work this one out. So my initial assessment would be £50. So what's that? We're about 3/4 of what you guys are.
Okay.
So what's that like? 80 bucks. Yeah, okay. 75, 80 bucks. And then obviously clinical x-rays, if I take those, they'll be anywhere between, again, 50 and 80. So again, anywhere to 80 to 120. So yeah, I mean, initial assessment's similar-ish. We're 45 for follow-ups. So again, 65.
Yeah.
My appointment slots last 7 to 10 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. So
that's for your every follow-up visit.
Yeah. So okay. I'm solo adjust. That's all I do.
Okay.
Just adjust. So I have a soft tissue therapist and rehab specialist on my team.
Okay.
Out of it. Don't want it. Not for
Love
me.
It. Love it. So then go, yeah. And I'm glad you're bringing that up, because it actually brings me to my next question is, what is a typical day for you day to day in the office?
I adjust.
So for new patient visits, for example, are you doing, you know, examinations, neurologics, vitals?
Yeah.
What does that look like?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I'll spend, half an hour with the patient. We always do line analysis with everyone. So we always do posture analysis. So I can get my CAs to do that.
Okay.
History generally will get the patient to do the majority of the history on an intake form.
Okay.
So then I might spend 5 to 10 minutes taking the history. Then I'd spend 10 to 15 minutes going through the neurologics. And then I'd do clinical x-rays as a rule of thumb.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, for me, super basic, super quick. It's just get them on the table. I'll never adjust them on the first visit. Never.
Okay.
Never adjust on the first visit. Always like to analyze my x-rays first. Always.
Okay.
Just had a couple of cases with, I've had a few osteopenics and osteoporotics come through the door. I've definitely had Mets as well. We've definitely had to spot a few.
Wow. Okay.
I even had a guy that, if you technically followed the x-ray regulation, they wouldn't have told you to x-ray this guy. But I just had this kind of, you know, sometimes when you get that gut feeling.
That thought, right.
Yeah. I had this guy who came in, he squatted. He was squatting with about 140 kilos. And he said he felt something like click in his low back. And I was like, there was no neurologics. There wasn't like just pain. Limited dish in range of motion, but generally relatively good. It was just really sore and it just wasn't going away. Yeah, it turns out he pars fractured.
about
20 to 25% slip on the vertical body.
Man.
And I was like, yeah, dude, we're probably not going to adjust you just yet.
Yeah.
this is fresh.
Has there ever been would there ever be a situation where you would adjust on the same day?
The only time I do it is for a transferring client.
Got it.
So if they're a regular chiropractic patient, but no.
Okay. Fair enough.
So there's two reasons. It negates the necessity of taking clinical x-rays, for one.
Okay.
Which I think, both on a clinical point of view and on a point of view of selling to the client, I think is not good, because it demotes what you've just done. Mm-hmm. And it also, we all know that we can evaluate x-rays in 2 to 5 minutes. I mean, we've all done a million x-rays. We know how to look at an x-ray. But the patient doesn't know that. The patient doesn't know that you can tell what an x-ray looks like in 2 to 5 minutes. And if you've just kind of glanced over something and said, yep, cool, this is the problem, I'm going to get you on the table, it kind of makes it look like you haven't really taken care to look at that problem. Then on the second point of view, that when you do a day one, day two, it warms the patient up more. It's a little bit more experience. They don't know why. He's a really super interesting guy. He's Dan Kennedy. He works with a lot of chiropractors. And generally what he found is that the drop off after day one, if you adjusted on the first visit without doing a proper report of findings, he found that the drop off was more than double on people
that
adjusted on the first visit. Yeah.
That's huge. It's a huge margin.
Yeah. So I don't do it.
I hear you. Other than Mets and the pars fracture, have you seen anything else pretty crazy?
Yeah, I had a guy come in that had to be carried into my room last week because he was super, super dizzy. That wasn't an x-ray patient, by the way, but I think it's a post, I don't know if this is a post-COVID injury. He seems to have had some sort of neurological infection, seems to be affecting his brainstem. His eye movements are pretty poor. His palate rising isn't great. His balance is off. His speech is slurred. So, yeah, I've had some pretty interesting stuff. I saw a cervical artery dissection when I was at university.
Oh, wow.
I've done a fair whack of BPPVs. I've had some fun stuff.
Now, do you treat the BPPV in your office?
Yes.
Like, do you do like the Dix Hallfike maneuver and the modified epigonal? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Simple, isn't it?
Very, very simple. Folks who aren't super familiar, vertigo, BPPV is one type of vertigo where there's a nystagmus or like a flutter in the eyelids that goes side to side. Can be very debilitating for a patient, can cause a lot of anxiety, but it is well treatable. And the focus with chiropractic care is to kind of simplify the statement here, is to help shift a lot of the dizziness crystals from one side of the ear to the other. And we can do a lot of help with that in general in terms of maneuvering and shifting things around and just mitigation in general. So,
and it's a really simple technique.
Yes, yes, very simple. And there's also a maneuver folks can do actually at home as well, called the CMOT, that you can do similar to the modified Epley's. Obviously, it's a lot more of an independent maneuver that you can do on your own, using a table or a chair or whatnot that can allow you to lay down and move in a way that you can actually do, kind of like mimic what we're doing as providers as well.
Yeah, it's great. So long as they don't have really severe BPV.
Yes. Off the jet. Yes. More advisable to do it actually on a table that looks like a chiropractic table, that, where you have a lot more room. Exactly. For sure. For sure. And folks who are interested more on this topic, I actually have an upcoming episode on BPPV as well. So stay tuned for that. but back to Dr. Hogg. Now, I don't know how it was for the UK, but and for folks who tuned in from the very beginning, how I found Dr. Hogg was when we were in quarantine from COVID. I was, just rustling through Spotify and the online web, and I found his podcast and I started listening to it. Gave me some inspiration. Obviously, we're kind of bored at work because no one was coming into the office because everyone was quarantining. Did you guys have a similar situation in the UK with lockdowns, and did that affect your business as well? Were people required to stay at home? How did that go for you guys?
Yeah, do you know what? Lockdown was probably one of the best things that happened to me.
Oh my God, I honestly, yes, I agree to you on that statement.
It was a funny one. So I think like everyone, I had that sudden, moment. because I've been in practice for, it was about 2.5 years at the point that the lockdown came. And it was literally almost to the day, a year after I started running my own practice.
Oh, wow.
And I was just like, we just finished my first year. We're just setting off my own accounts. And I was just like,
oh no.
I was just like, I've only just started making money.
Yeah. Oh man.
So it was a stressful experience. We were shut for it. We weren't shut for that long. We had really vague guidelines, like super vague.
Okay.
Initially it was emergency cases, and then it was anyone with like a declining health. You tell me.
What?
Anyone with a declining health. Well, most patients that are coming to us will generally come to us because they're complaining. Generally. And they may come back to make sure that their health isn't declining. So they're in a declining state. They're in a declining state, and they get that. That's why they're a maintenance patient, because they feel like they'd decline if they were not there.
Yeah.
So they basically, all of my clients, I was like, look, we're allowed to see people so long as it's for health complaints. Should I book you in? And I spent hours phoning patients. If they didn't want to come in, I was like, look, is there anything else I can do for you? And they're like, oh, it'd be really great for you to send me some exercises. Fine. Done. Recorded a whole YouTube channel where I put about 150 different exercises on YouTube. And I was just sending, I was like phoning people. I was like, look, would you like an appointment? No, I'd like to. And actually, funny enough, we got given a grant during the lockdown. Was for about £10,000. So what that'd be, well, like this, about $1,300. $13,000. Do you know what I did with it?
What?
donated it to all of my long-term patients.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
So we gave away 16,000 pounds. So it would have been 22,000 pounds or $22,000-ish, $21,000 of care. FOC, free of charge.
Wow, that's incredible. That is incredible.
And, then after that, my practice went...
Woo!
So within about 3 months of reopening, we were back up to... I was seeing nearly 200 visits a week. Brought my first associate in. My first associate went up to 78 visits in 3 months.
It's fantastic.
Then my massage therapist started coming back, and you know, we're like, oh, I've got this great idea. We're just going to add a free massage onto the end of every care plan, and then patients stayed for that too. It was great.
That's fantastic. So,
actually, funny. And ironically, because it slowed down now that all the other markets and industries are starting to open and holidays and stuff are starting to come back. But whilst the lockdowns and the only thing that people could do was take care of themselves, everyone was in our office. And okay, granted, we had to sit and listen to people's BS about COVID. but
if you know, you know.
Do you know what? Like we got to serve people. We got to serve people. We got to help people. Yeah, okay. Did I have to wear gloves and an apron and a mask? And yeah, fine. Do you know what? If it meant that I can help people improve on their health. And look, you know, not taking anything away from COVID, people were sick and people suffered. Yeah. Was it as bad as what we potentially thought it was going to be? Well, I haven't seen it, but that doesn't mean that other families haven't.
Right. I agree. And just like you guys, I think we had like a hard shutdown for maybe 2 months. And it was, again, also very vague. What was our role? And I think down the way, it was like, if we can relieve the hospital congestion of patients who are just there for back pain, and we're obviously well-equipped to take care of back pain alone, then shift them over our way, then we were eventually deemed essential. And it was great. Even in the early part of it, I was doing a lot of virtual appointments on Zoom, on, you know, the platform on our EHR, giving out stretches and exercises, and then people were just so damn bored being at home. It's like, I need to come in. I'm in a lot of pain. They wanted to tuck my ear off as well. And we get that. But yeah, very, very, very similar situation. And then after, I think everything really kind of dwindled down, then it became very, very busy because people were just in need to be in direct contact with us as their providers, for sure.
Nice.
Now, do you guys take insurance? How does that work for you guys in the UK? What's that like?
Nah.
No, okay. Gosh. Okay.
Yeah.
Is there like a benefit?
What, to taking cash?
Is there a benefit?
The money's in your bank tomorrow.
Not as you know. Is there a benefit that, for example, in the US, there are employers that will give something called health savings account? Or health savings account, that's kind of like a debit card for medical healthcare uses. So it's kind of like the caveat to not having insurance. Does the UK offer something like that? Okay.
So you guys, your healthcare system, right? It's 100%, pretty much 100% privatized, right? There's very little state healthcare, whereas the UK, pretty much everything is health, national health service. So we pay taxes so that we can have a free health service. Granted, it's very flaky, especially in the last few years, because it's now so overrun and we've spent so much money on it that there aren't the facilities to keep up with the demand. But no, people can claim insurance for health things like chiropractic, osteopathy, massage, even stuff like acupuncture if people are registered. But I do not claim it.
Okay.
So if someone wants to claim health insurance, that's fine. We'll bill you the receipts. You take the receipts to your health provider or your health insurance, and you bill the health insurance. Because my experience, we've billed health insurances before. They suck at paying. And I know multiple docs that lost their practices to billing insurances because they had to pay their associates. And the insurance companies took too long, and their company was in rent for too long. You just
that's terrible. Can't.
You've got... Especially if you've got associates, you've got mouths to feed.
Yeah. It's so much struggle here too in the US. You know, there are companies that will pay, there are providers that will pay $10, 10, 15 US dollars for care that is worth in the hundreds. And it's like, it's hard to go full cash to speak tech. People want to use their insurance because it's a benefit that they get from their employer. So, I mean, I feel like we could talk on and on, Dr. Hogg. I know it's near your bed. So I do want to say, you know, thank you so much for coming on the line with us. I personally have learned a whole lot, and I've always wanted to reach out to you. I've been a fan of your podcast, and I'm a fan of a lot of the topics you bring on your show. And I think for me, it's very intriguing as to how things are handled over the UK and what chiropractic care is like across the Atlantic Ocean.
I think it's the same but different. Was it they say in Thailand? Same but different. we have docs that will practice the same as you guys. You know, we'll have this seriously MSK. It's not different, but it is different. There are different regulations and different laws, but you know, look, we're all the same. And funny enough, even what I found between MSK and Vital Docs, they're all doing the same thing. They're all healing, and that's what's most important. It's the person at the table, not our ego. If someone thinks that they can heal 300 people a week, be my guest. And if those people are all happy, then who am I to judge them?
I hear you. Dr. Hogg, remind me again where you are, where your office is at.
So we're in a small town called Eastbourne. It's about 45 minutes down the coast to Brighton. So we're on the south coast of of England. I've been there for now, is it my third or fourth year? I believe it's nice. Fourth, you know.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Little seaside town.
Hey, if you already need a chiropractic services, chiropractic care, go hit up my boy, Dr. Patrick Hogg. Also, his podcast, Coffee with the Chiropractor, you can find it on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, we're on Spotify. We're on Google Play. We're on pretty much every network. Awesome. You can listen to podcasts on.
He's got some great material out there. Folks, Dr. Hogg, thank you so much for coming on the show. Until next time, again, thank you very, very, very much.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
For sure.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Coffee with Dr. Ray. If you found this information useful, please like and follow my channel on your favorite listening platform. And share this podcast with your friends and be sure to tag me. I hope to see you next time for another episode of Coffee with Dr. Ray with your host, Dr. Ray Pomano.